Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Radio Free or Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free or Radio Liberty's media manager for South in Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Last week, we have seen chaotic scenes in a number of major cities in Kazakhstan where the participants of opposition organized rallies met with the harsh reaction by the security forces in which over 100 people were reportedly detained. Most of them were released later, but some did not. And one of them was Dawlat Agadil, who tragically died in police custody. And it is outraging activists who say authorities are responsible for his death. On the bigger picture, the protest rallies, which started a couple of months ago and have visibly increased following President Tokayev assuming power, are now turning more violent and more frequent. So today on the Majlis podcast, we are here to do a quick reality check as to what has just happened and what has been happening for the past days and months and where things are headed going forward. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Zhanvolod Mamai, the leader of the Democratic Party of Kazakhstan. He was among those who detained last week. He's joining us from Nur-Sultan. Paul Stronsky, former U.S. diplomat and senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment's Eurasia programs, joining us from Washington, D.C. Toro Koldorov, the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service, is joining us from Prague, along with Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So where to start? It looks like, Zhanvolod, we are in the middle of two big events, one of which was held last weekend, and the one is in the pipeline for this weekend. So let's start with the last week. Though most of the detainees were released later, including you, the fact that around 100 people were rounded up, I guess it was a quite something. So tell us about it. What happened that day?
According to official information, 53 people were detained last weekend, but we are sure that there were much more people were detained, because only nearly 80 people from Democratic Party were detained for several hours, and they were taken to police custody on weekends. And there were other protesters who were detained that day. So first of all, there were two rallies, two meetings last weekend. Our Democratic Party went to the rally because we couldn't hold our first party conference. Our people, our activists were arrested at the beginning of the week from the regions. For example, in Janaozin, there was one of our activists' car was burnt because he was preparing to go to the party conference in Almaty. And later he was arrested for 5 days. He and his brother, six people from Janaozin, were arrested because they wanted to come to the party conference in Almaty on the 22nd of February. Two people were detained and arrested in Atrau. One activist was arrested in Uralsk. So more than 100 people couldn't get to the party conference from four regions. And we decided not to, in such situation, we decided not to hold a party conference, but to go to the rally. It was an unsanctioned meeting, and I was detained and arrested for 3 days, 1 day before the planned rally on the 21st of February. And there was also another member of our organization committee of Democratic Party. He was arrested for 15 days, and now he is in custody.
Very interesting. You also mentioned your party. It's interesting that at the time when being an opposition member is not a good idea, it looks like, in Kazakhstan, but you decided to switch quickly into their lines. So let's talk about the calculation behind that a little bit later. Talking about the last week, I guess the response by the authorities was somewhat notable. The fact that they picked up, like, you know, numbers are different, depend on who you speak to, 100 or more. Though most of them were released, it was quite a response. Paul, we were talking about this yesterday. How you interpret this response?
Well, I think it's quite troubling. And I think it's quite troubling considering this is a government that has promised to be a reformist government. This is President Tokayev has talked about how he wants to listen to the population and make a government that's more accountable to the people. This is a government that desperately needs to be more accountable to the people, but it doesn't seem to know how to do that. And when there's pushback at some of the reforms that have been proposed because they might not change anything in reality. The government seems to be almost paralyzed in knowing what to do to this rising dissent and discontent that they're seeing in society, and they're rushing back to old techniques. So it does not seem to be the type of response you would expect from a president who is has declared that he wants to have a more democratic, more accountable government. And to me, that just suggests that, you know, while there's a lot of talk, there is perhaps not full buy-in on all sectors of the government, or even a full awareness of how to go about doing this, because there's great risks. Once you open up and start reform, they can take on a life of its own. And I think that the government seems to recognize that, recognizes the need to make some changes, but doesn't know how to go about doing that, and instead is showing that sort of the repressive elements are certainly winning and using those tactics. And I think it's just going to cause greater problems for the government in the coming future, and for the legitimacy of Tokayev as well as former President Nazarbayev.
Bruce, you've been also watching these growing frustration in Kazakhstan. Certainly there's a shift in a way that the authorities are responding to these protests. So the tragic death of Dawlat Agadil is really one of the striking examples. Of course, there are questions about how he died, but given that this tragic incident occurred under the watch of the security forces, rightly there's a suspicion about the role in this incident. So maybe his death is a new level, but the authorities are increasingly losing patience and increasingly using force. But what's the implications of this strategy? Is it really effective?
No, I would say that it is not working at all. I mean, the government seems to have developed this strategy of they'll warn people ahead of, they know that these rallies are going to be held. They warn the people not to come out. A couple days before the rallies actually take place, they start going out and rounding up people, leaders of the suspected leaders, leaders of these movements, people who are really active in these things, you know, to keep them out. But in the end, people still keep coming out on the street, you know, and they send increasing numbers of police and buses to drag them away. But it certainly hasn't cowed the public. I mean, they still come out. You know, but this has developed into this tactic all the time. They try to do a little bit to cut it off at the start, but it doesn't seem to intimidate people very much anymore. And people are still coming out. And you know, just from the videos, we can see that they're from all ages.
Yeah. Mr. Mamai, why you guys are doing this? You see the authorities are losing patience. Why to go through this confrontation, and how long you can keep doing this, and how far can you resist? I mean, it's painful on so many levels to see what you guys are going through. It is painful physically, financially, and it's painful emotionally. What's the point you are trying to make?
I think that, first of all, that it is a moment, it is a time to act here in Kazakhstan. You know, after 19th of March 2019, after retirement of Nursultan Nazarbayev from the presidential post, the power, presidential power, was desacralized. People now are not so afraid as before. People are ready to go to the streets. But, you know, people do not go to the streets here in Kazakhstan on democratic issue, on the issue of freedom of speech. But, for example, if it connects with Kazakh lands, with Kazakh language, with something sacred, people will go to the streets, and the people are ready to go to the streets. And the last presidential elections also showed that people are going to vote against Nursultan Nazarbayev's regime. They are tired of Nursultan Nazarbayev personally. They are tired of this authoritarian regime. And people now are ready to make changes. You know, it is impossible to predict when the real changes will come and when millions or thousands of people will go to the streets. But I think that it is, the time is very close, because this regime is a political bankrupt now. The people do not believe them.
Thank you. Torokul, Mr. Mamai is very optimistic. As a journalist, how do you see the ongoing people's power, movements of people, the way they are evolving, the way their numbers are evolving, their messages are evolving, and the type of people adding themselves into these groups and the causes they stand for?
You know, Mohammed, it was very difficult to imagine a couple of years ago that there will be a crowd of people on the main squares demanding the resignation of the president, of the change of regime, and saying "shall get," which means "go away, old man," for example. This kind of chant, we couldn't listen. People were, you know, hiding, but they were writing, of course, in social media, their discontent, their angry posts to the regime. But it was very difficult to imagine that there will be crowds of people, hundreds of people against the government. But now, since last year, exactly 1 year, I can say, from the beginning of the tragedy in Astana back then, when five little girls from a single family died in a house fire, and it was a trigger in this situation when thousands of mothers went for protest demonstrations right the next day. And since then, we have seen, I don't know how many protest demonstrations and even one-man pickets. There were hundreds of people and so many detentions. But what we see now is, after 1 year, what we can tell as journalists that there changed government, even though Paul very rightly mentions that it is a listening government. But it showed that this government was not able to learn from its own mistakes. From the beginning of this process, they were detaining people. We saw mass detentions during early presidential elections right after that. But it has never been analyzed by its own government in Kazakhstan and where it is going, how it will impact to the image of the country. And the human rights records, press freedom records, I think, went down since then because of this very brutal reaction from the authorities. Mm-hmm. And but at the same time, as you said, and as Jambulat mentioned, this anger among people is not decreasing because of this kind of reaction.
I was wondered, Torakulum, what are they encouraged from that they have this energy to continue this? I mean, are they getting to somewhere? Do they believe that they are achieving something? Obviously, from the other hand, the authorities are increasingly using force. Again, I'm just referring to this tragic death in the custody of an activist there. I mean, what keeps them motivated?
I would say their motivation probably comes from two different sides. First of all, there are now opposition groups, unregistered. There are, actually, in Kazakhstan, there is no registered opposition, right? Unregistered Democratic Party of Kazakhstan, banned as an extremist organization, Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan, which led by Mukhtar Ablyazov. And there are so many other groups with young activists, Oyan Kazakhstan, Respublika, now newly established Kushe Partiyasi. There are so many groups who are calling people for demonstrations. This might be one motivation. The second one is authorities itself, because they are, their reaction, how they are brutally detaining, and this latest tragic event with mysterious death of a prominent activist also, I think, triggered for even more, you know, protest mood among the society.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we are going to discuss just in a bit about how this tragic death is going to factor into what might happen going forward. But before that, it just in a couple of words, since you are on the ground, Jambulat, what happened to this kid, this activist there? I mean, there are various information coming out. Authorities say something else. Activists believe in something different. What has happened there?
So, Dulat Agadil, you mean?
Yes.
There are a lot of versions. But first of all, people do not believe the official version that he was dead because of heart attack. People do not believe it, first of all. In my opinion, I think that he was killed. He was killed because this person, Dulat Agadil, was in custody for several times. He was arrested 7 times in 3 months. So this person knows very well what is the prison, and he knows why he is going to the prison. And I do not believe personally, for example, I do not believe that he was shocked or he was afraid, he was frightened. I think that there was maybe not deliberately, but accidentally, maybe he was killed.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that, accidentally?
I think that, first of all, he was beaten by the police officers, which is a common place.
How do you know that he's beaten?
Because, first of all, there was also today was published the photos of his body, and there were signs that he was beaten. It was shown on the photo. It was published on social media. On Azatek, there was also a material about it. very detailed material. So
okay, you refer to Azatlik's report. So Torkul, you are running that shop. So how the authorities explain the bruises that Jean-Rod mentioned were found in the dead body of this activist?
Yes, official reaction to the latest video, which now is circulating in internet, with the body of Dulat Agadil, we heard today. Today morning, the prosecutor office of Nur-Sultan city hold a press conference where they were saying that it's a normal situation when the dead body after some time start having some colors different, like bluish and pinky, this kind of signs that might look like injury signs. But that's a problem that, as Jean Bulat said, the lack of trust to the words, to official version of the event is growing. But at the same time, I should mention about the reaction from the relatives who also were during the examination process, who was saying to Azatlık as well yesterday that there were no signs. But we hear different versions even now from other countries. Some doctors were saying that this is a clear sign of beating. For example, I heard it from Kyrgyz doctors.
Okay, interesting. So, Paul, you are a big picture person here. So the fact that this activist, Dulat Agadil, passed away once he was in the police custody, my question is this a new turning point in what has been happening over the past couple of months in Kazakhstan? How much of a big deal is this going forward?
I mean, I do think this is a big deal. You know, I think one of the reasons why you've sort of seen this greater activization of civil society and greater activism is that, you know, people would be thrown in jail, released, and sort of it was a very harsh detention and some roughing up of people. But this is the first person to actually to die in such questionable circumstances. And I'll just be honest, the government has shown a tin ear to this case, you know, rushing out to claim that he's drunk, now trying to change their story. Senior leadership just went on as if nothing had happened, went on with their days, hasn't really talked about it. And so I think you've seen the level of anger increase dramatically just over the past few days. That anger is both directed at Takayev, but also, as already mentioned, at Nazarbayev. And so this sort of the anger is definitely rising. And then just, you know, the tin ear of, you know, arresting people after the funeral. I think, you know, this is a government that is, you know, hoping this will go away. But I think particularly after the death, it's not going to. And I'll just add, you know, one of the things that a government is supposed to do, any effective government starts to lose political legitimacy when they can't protect their people. And here a person died in government custody. And this is after a year of the government botching, whether that's the fire that killed children, another fire killed children this year, whether it's the violence a few weeks ago against the Dungan minority. This is a government that hasn't been able to protect its people and take care of its people. So I think this level of anger is just going to continue to grow.
Very interesting. Thank you, Paul. So under these circumstances, another protest is in the pipeline. So what's that about to happen? And how Agadil's death will factor into the turnout, growing anger, and authorities' reaction to these protests? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today I'm joined by Jean-Bulat Mamai, the leader of the Democratic Party of Kazakhstan, Paul Strunsky, former U.S. diplomat and senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment's Eurasia programs, Torkul Durov, the director of RFRL's Kazakh service, Bruce Panier, the editor of RFRL Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the latest protests in Kazakhstan and the way the authorities are trying to handle the growing frustration. Now, let's start with you, Jean-Bulat Mamai, with what's coming up this weekend, the planned protests on Sunday, the day when this podcast also will be published. So what's the plan? What's the plan, Mr. Mamai?
On the 1st of March, on Sunday, at 12 o'clock, there will be nationwide rallies. And the first demand, which is the retirement of Nur-Sultan Nazarbayev from the post of head of the Security Council. Of course, the main topic, it is objective and the open investigation of Dulat Agadir's death. Because people want to know the true story, people want to know the real facts, and the people want to know why Dulat Agadir was dead, if he was killed or not killed. And of course, first of all, they want to Nursultan Nazarbayev to be retired the Ministry of Internal Affairs, and President Tokayev. So there will be anti-government and anti-authoritarian rallies on the 1st of March. And all political powers and political groups are united this time.
Who are they?
All of them are calling to vote. It is our Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. It is Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan, this movement of Mukhtar Ablyazov. It is Basay channel, which is one of the most popular channels on YouTube, opposition channels on YouTube. Oyam Kazakhstan and other political movements are united, and they are calling to go to these rallies on the 1st of March.
Asking for Nazarbayev's retirement, it's a big deal. What's the level of your confidence that these demands will be met?
It is difficult to predict how much people will go to these rallies. For example, if to these rallies will come several tens of thousands of people, I think that, of course, the changes will come to Kazakhstan. But if several hundred just people will come, anyway, it will be a signal to these authorities. Anyway, it will be a signal to Nazarbayev himself personally, to Tokayev administration, that people are not afraid of them, people are not frightened, and the people want to real democratic reforms in Kazakhstan.
Okay.
Mohammad, if you allow me, I would ask one question, yep. Mr. Mamai.
Go ahead.
As you said, this time several opposition forces are united and organizing this nationwide protest rallies together. How it happened, taking into account the latest situation, especially between your Democratic Party and Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan of Mukhtar Ablyazov, because we know you are accusing each other being a project of authorities, but now you are united and organizing this protest rally together. How it happened? Did you talk to each other?
No, we didn't talk to each other, but I talked with Aido Sadikov, which is an immigrant and a political activist who lives in Ukraine. Today we had a meeting with other political groups here, political movements, with Hak political party and other political activists, human rights activists. And so they firstly they declared these political groups, political activists, they declared on the 1st of March to go to the rally at 12 o'clock. And we decided to support Mukhtar Ablyazov. I see that he also called his supporters to go to these rallies, and we also called our supporters to go to these rallies. I think that Dulat Agadir's death, it is a situational unification, but it united all these political groups and powers.
That's I understood. You are joining Divikas protest rally. Is that correct?
No, it is not Divikas meeting. Initiative was from some political groups who are living here in Kazakhstan, which is from mothers, Saulia Abidinova. They went to the Akimat to get permission to go to this rally earlier, before Dulat Agadir's death. They plan to go to this rally on the 1st of March. And also there are car drivers from Armenia, from Kyrgyzstan, who also plan to go to this rallies before Dulat Agadir's death. So several groups, social groups, they decided to go to this meeting, to this rally before Dulat Agadir's death, and they called, and we decided also to go, and we met today. We decided to support
the Democratic Party.
And I see that Mukhtar Ablyazov also supported.
One more question, if I may, about the unification, about how much it is possible now to negotiate between opposition forces, I mean between DVK, DPK and other groups, just to talk together and to go with one slogan or one demand. How much is it possible?
We do not have any channels of negotiations with Mukhtar Ablyazov personally, but with other political groups we negotiate, we meet, and we have a dialogue, we support each other. And I think that first of all, it is maybe not today impossible to be in one political organization or in one political movement. But I think that such topics as Dulat Agadir's death, for example, freedom to political prisoners, for example, defending national sovereignty of Kazakhstan or land reforms, for example, such sacred topics can unite. And it can make all these political groups and the powers to go to the streets together. Mm-hmm. I think that there are no any obstacles.
Okay. The way, Torkel, you are asking these questions, I guess you are stuck with something here. I mean, you are surprised about something. So what's that? Is there anything significant, the way that these groups are coming together in these protest rallies? Is there anything surprised you?
Actually not, because as Jan Bulat pointed out, we saw several times in past that this kind of overall questions, sacred topics, as he said, united opposition forces. They were coming with the same demand to the one political position rallies. That is not a big surprise. But at the same time, we are now in the situation when we see that opposition forces are a little bit divided in the country. And we are in the situation where we are expecting the early parliamentary elections. That question is becoming more interesting. And that is why for me it was important to hear from Jan Bulat whether these opposition forces are able to talk each other and come to some kind of communication. Yes.
That's interesting. And also now, in fact, Jan Bulat has hinted to this. I mean, the one factor why these groups might be coming together is the death of this, tragic death of this activist, Agadil, in police custody. So how is this going to factor in terms of the turnout in the protests planned for Sunday? I mean, Bruce, do you want to take this question?
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, that's the big question. You would think that, you know, it's besides the fact that Dulat Agadil is dead, and there was videos of him being taken out of his apartment. It was clear that he was in good health, and yet a few hours later he's dead. Now that's enough to outrage people anyway. But the government's sad attempts to try to explain away the cause of his death would just infuriate people more. You know, I really do think this is one of those moments where there's a lot of emotion that's going into this, and you probably will see a lot bigger crowds. And now after this death too, you also have to wonder. I mean, people, we've seen people video, you know, images of people being dragged away into these buses before, but if you're getting dragged away into one of these buses, you're going to have to sit there and think, wow, am I going to take a big beating at the police station? Am I going to make it out alive? You know, so it's probably going to be a lot more fierce resistance this time to being detained. And not that it wasn't significant resistance before, but I know if it was me and I'd been going out on the streets and I'd been detained once or twice this time, I would do everything I could to keep the police from putting me in a bus. And that's going to make it even more difficult.
Wow, wow. Paul, where your eyes will be, the fact that, all these forces are coming together in preparation for apparently a big protest that's planned for Sunday. So given the fact that now it is kind of, we are speaking a different level of reaction by the authorities and different level of enthusiasm by the activists.
Yeah. So I think it's important to sort of see how high the activist anger is and how, you know, whether that pulls people of all sectors of society, the old, the young, out. So I think that's something to definitely look for. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting about this is that, you know, very often you see much more protest activity in the summer, but here we're seeing it in brutal winter. So I think that certainly indicates that people are angry. And I also think, you know, it'd be very important to sort of watch how the police, how the security forces react. It's a very dicey situation because somebody died. They're going to have to be very careful and sort of make sure that you know, doesn't happen again. So sort of this interaction between the police and the security forces will be key at a time when, you know, police are certainly going to be nervous and the security forces and the people are going to be both angry, but also nervous. So I think it'll be, you know, it's going to be a very dicey situation, both for those who decide to go out as well as those who are going to try to keep them from showing a big show of force. I also think it'll be interesting to see, you know, this is supposed to be all over the country to sort of see how wide this actually goes.
And also, I wondered, I mean, Paul, the fact that you occasionally have interaction with the Kazakh authorities, and I'm sure that you also speak about these protests. I mean, just to kind of make sense of the level of nervousness of the authorities on the top, how much of nervousness is there seeing that this is a growing phenomenon in the country?
I think there are people in the Kazakh government who certainly get it, and who certainly get that society is angry and that there needs to be changes. But I'm not sure that that always goes up to the most senior level officials, and I'm pretty sure that that doesn't always go to every sort of street level security force that comes out onto the street. And so, you know, I think this is a problem with authoritarian states, is that, you know, they might not have a very good sense of the mood, and sometimes people don't want to always tell the leader of the country, you know, the true state of things. So I think there's a lot of confusion inside the Kazakh government, and there's probably a lot of disagreement about how to handle this. I think, you know, so far they haven't handled it quite well. You know, whether or not they can recover from that is an unknown question. Mm-hmm. But I certainly hope that someone will at least indicate that they need to be a little bit more responsive and not show as what I said, what I see is a tin ear towards the population and almost a disdainful attitude towards the population that is angry and grieving and very concerned about the future.
Not like Turkmenistan, where the president is kind of isolated mostly from the local realities, but in Kazakhstan's case, it looks like that President Tokayev is aware of what's really happening in the streets. I mean, when you follow his tweets, certainly you get that reflection, that impression. Like one of his last tweets was about he was trying to kind of, in a way, to explain the draft law on rallies, for example. And it also showed to me that the authorities are not really in a mood of compromising anything to sort out this difference between the activists and the oppositions and the authorities. So what's the way out from this situation now? Big picture question, Bruce, maybe you?
You know, I mean, they made a not even a half-hearted attempt at forming some reconciliation council that was supposed to involve
that was the case
various
thing,
members of society, but that was a miserable failure. They didn't really invite anybody who could be called an opposition figure or an independent or anything. But, you know, so I don't know if they can even make that offer. Even if they sincerely made that offer again, I'm not sure anyone would take them seriously at this point. You know, this is going to be tough because, like I said, they've shown that they're kind of somewhere in between. They don't want to do a crackdown. They know that this is bad for them. It's bad publicity, and it runs counter to everything Tokayev said he was going to do. So I don't say they can do that. At the same time, the tactics they've been using don't seem to work, and it might be significant that we have someone like Jean-Bulat Mamai on our program right now, even though it's less than 48 hours until they're supposed to have the demonstrations. I would have expected that he would have been picked up by now, and so would a lot of other people. So that kind of already shows that the authorities realize that, you know, I haven't seen any reports of detentions today. So maybe they've decided that's not a good tactic anymore.
If I may, I would disagree with Bruce, because, you know, it is now not so difficult to predict the reaction by authorities during the protest meetings. We saw in last 1 year so many examples. What might happen on Sunday, if there will be lots of people, crowds of people chanting on the main streets, then probably internet will be, first of all, shut down. And people probably will be detained at least for a couple of hours. But I want to tell about very important things that in last 1 year we saw a rise of all protest meetings, demonstrations, but all of them were peaceful protest demonstrations. That's very important, I think. And that is why there is a contradiction between why authorities would react so harshly. There were so many cases when people didn't have even time to go to the protest meetings. They were not even able to leave their houses, but they were taken to the detention center. That is actually showing the kind of panic inside authorities, probably.
Yes, certainly. On Bruce's point, though, Jean-Bulat, we are taping this podcast on Friday, and it will hit the internet on Sunday. So there is a less than 48 hours between now and the day when you guys will be hitting the streets on Sunday. So what will be going on through your mind between now and then, given the way things usually develop before, during, or after the protests like this?
I think, first of all, maybe the key leaders of political movements and groups will be arrested. Mm. Maybe I will be arrested tomorrow, and the other maybe leaders and prominent civil right groups leaders or political activists will be arrested and detained for several days maybe. And I think that, first of all, there will be mass detentions. I predict that there will be mass detentions. I agree with Torokul because the reaction is predictable of the authorities. And maybe there will be some provokers at the squares who will chant slogans in defense of Nazarbayev, maybe, or something like that, or some other provokers. I think that, anyway, the reaction will be very harsh. They will block social media, they will block popular websites, as Azatlık here in Kazakhstan. I think that it will be just repressive reaction from the authorities.
Wow. Well, okay. It was a really insightful discussion. Also, just the last point, before I just conclude the discussion here, about your party is just talking about the repression. I mean, you couldn't hold the Congress, so your party is not registered, and you decided to switch to opposition. What's going on?
We were we are an opposition political party. Mm. First of all, we have, de facto, we have a political party here in Kazakhstan because we have supporters in every region of Kazakhstan. We have branches, we have activists who want to be in our political party and who want to support our political party. We have idea, we have program, we have our charter of our political party. But, of course, we must to have a procedure of registration of our political party. And we couldn't, because of repressions, because of prosecutions, we couldn't hold our first party conference on the 22nd of February. We went to the rally. But now, next week, I think we will start. Our initiative group wants to start a new procedure of registration of our political party. We have to start a new initiative group of no less than 1,000 people and to hold our party conference. We will try to be registered in Kazakhstan.
Why authorities were stopping your members from coming into the Congress? I mean, which eventually led that you couldn't start the process. So what's their opposition to your party?
Because Nursultan Nazarbayev personally controls all political parties here in Kazakhstan. We have only 6 registered political parties, and they are all controlled by Nursultan Nazarbayev himself and his authoritarian regime. Mm. And it is a great danger for them to have a new political party here in Kazakhstan that can go to the elections, that can participate at elections, that can go to the polls. Okay. Because they are afraid of political competition.
Okay.
They are political bankrupt, and if, for example, our Democratic Party will be registered, for example, and go hypothetically go to the elections, I think that we can destroy Nurotan. It is a party of political bankrupts.
Okay. So, is there any question to Can Bulat about his political party and the future of his political movement before I conclude the discussion here? 1, 2, 3. I guess we are done for today. So thank you, Jean-Vlad Mamai, the leader of the Unregistered Democratic Party of Kazakhstan. Also, big thanks goes to Paul Stronsky, former U.S. diplomat and senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment's Eurasia programs, Torokul Dorov, the director of RFRL's Kazakh service, Bruce Panier, the editor of RFRL's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, RFRL's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.